This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Noel Lim. It's 7:06 a.m, Tuesday the 14th of July, and in about 15 minutes, we're going to be recapping what happened at Parliament yesterday with comments from Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid, Research Fellow at the Ilham Centre.
And later tonight, yes, you heard me correct, later tonight, the BFM webinar will be taking a look at gold as a wealth preservation tool. Wong Xiaoning and BFM founder Malik Ali will chat with Robin Lee of Hello Gold and Rajan Devadasan, CEO of RD Wealth Creation. And that's going to be happening tonight at 8 p.m. on BFM's Facebook page.
But right now, we're taking a look at the markets.
Yes, so yesterday's trading, US stocks hit record highs before dropping on signs that COVID-19 is blocking states from reopening, such as California and some of the other Sun Belt states. So the Dow closed flat, marginally up 0.04%. S&P 500 was down 0.9% after briefly reaching a record high since March. NASDAQ was down 2.1%, but I think this is on the back of price swings in Tesla. And over in Asia, the STI was down 0.8%, perhaps after PAP's showing in the elections where they lost like 4 seats. So, yeah, but the rest of the markets in Asia were more upbeat.
Yeah, investors had hoped that the US earnings season would see most companies beat forecasts given the low expectations. And if we take a look at the rest of the region in Asia anyway, Japan was up 2.2%. Hong Kong was up just barely about 0.2%. Shanghai was up 1.8%, quite strong there as well. And the FBM KLCI, Home Sweet Home, up 0.9% yesterday. Considering the markets closed at 5 p.m, this was after Parliament was, closed for the day.
So for more insights into global markets this morning, we have on the line with us Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thank you so much for joining us. Now, last night, the NASDAQ took a tumble over concerns of a resurgence of the virus. But will tech still be the sector to overweight as earnings season starts in earnest?
I mean, I think so. The big companies, technology companies, are still very much it's a tailwind when it comes to being digital, working remotely. A lot of schools here in the United States are not going to open in the fall, so that means more remote learning, more pressure to do everything digital. So, and when you talk about capital expenditures, companies now looking very carefully, like, how do we right-size our businesses for the supply-demand shock of the coronavirus? And I think that leads to more tech investment. So I do believe that if you own technology, stick with it.
The S&P 500 Financials Index had fallen 26% since the end of December, while the broader index has nearly recouped all its losses. So is the market overly negative on banks?
Well, not necessarily, in the sense that, you know, we've had this incredible spike in unemployment. We've got deferral of mortgages. We're going to see more bankruptcies, corporate bankruptcies. So I think the market's got it right. But big banks in the United States are well capitalized. We did the stress test. So, you know, there's always leaders and laggards. But I do think at the end of the day, you know, the banks this time around, they're the solution to the problem. The great financial crisis, they were the problem. But this time around, banks are doing their own, holding their own, the big banks in particular. So I think, you know, a lot of them are trading at, you know, under book value, and I do think at some point investors will realize the value and step in and be more owners as opposed to sellers.
Right. And Joe, looking beyond the financial sector, are there any other sectors that you're keeping an eye on this earnings season that could surprise on the upside?
Great question. I mean, you know, industrials, because we're looking, you know, you look at copper prices, the upturn in PMIs globally, particularly China, good numbers out of Europe. Cyclical should be in the sweet spot, but we need confirmation from the earnings and the guidance, of course, to point us in that direction. So, and whether it's industrials, materials, everyone knows healthcare, technology, that story. Financials have lagged, where everyone knows that. So there could be some sweet spot when it comes to industrials in lieu of and in expectation that we're looking at a globalized, synchronized expansion into 2021. And I know there's a lot of problems between now and then with COVID-19, Brazil, India, the United States, and cases are soaring still. But I think the markets are looking forward. And so I'm very interested in industrials, materials in particular.
Now, Joe, taking a look as well at Europe, the ECB meets this Thursday as Europe is starting to emerge from the pandemic's worst effects. So will the ECB keep the status quo on interest rates, and or does the Eurozone need more QE?
Well, Well, I think the ECB has done a lot already to help put a floor underneath growth and the equity markets in Europe. I think the big issue is the EU summit. I think it's 17th and 18th July, where there has to be a consensus around pushing forward this $800 billion plus stimulus package. You know, the Frugal Four, led by the Netherlands, they're holding out. Germany is going to be very tough in trying to push this package forward. So I actually think fiscal policy in Europe near term is going to be more important than monetary policy. The ECB has done a great job being there, backstopping, but the markets are looking for that fiscal stimulus, that big package to roll forward and be approved by all the member states. That's going to be tough. That's not a given. So there could be some volatility coming out of Europe here in the near term.
And over in China, the Q2 GDP numbers will be out this Thursday. What's your best guess of the number?
Honestly, I don't have a guess on it. I do, obviously, an improvement from Q1. And when you look at like April, May, June, everything sequentially is getting better. The PMI numbers, a lot of U.S. companies, not a lot, a few are even reporting better sales in China since the pandemic started. So I expect it to be a good number. But, you know, to me, it's the follow through. Is it investment led? It won't be export led consumer. So I like if it's consumption led, that's a positive sign because that big Chinese consumers out there spending. That's not only good for China, that's good for Malaysia, it's good for the global economy, it's good for U.S. multinationals. So that's what I'm looking for, the composition of growth as opposed to the number itself.
Do you think that whatever number we see come up from the GDP, what kind of effect will it have on the Chinese equity rally that we've seen, as well as the yuan in recent times?
Well, as you know, I mean, the equities are, you know, they've already printed a good number when it comes to the GDP, but earnings will have to follow along. You know, the yuan, I mean, the biggest issue for China is, you know, are they ready to open their capital accounts? Are they ready to have a convertible currency? Are they really ready to step up and challenge the dollar's reserve currency? And honestly, I don't think they are. I mean, they're still managing their way through the crisis. But the key is, you know, when we get the GDP print from China, and equities are signaling this, that China is part of that global synchronized expansion. That's very important. It's the second largest economy in the world. And for the world economy to push ahead and reclaim the ground that we lost, China has to be a part of it. And the EU and the United States has to come along behind them. So I think, and more importantly, you know, you're right. I mean, the yuan, I don't think it's ready for prime time reserve currency. But China's growth story is important to put a floor underneath the equity bounce rally that we've had, and I think they'll come through.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Joe. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, with his thoughts on China's numbers as well as the ECB. And I think, you know, just jumping off of that point, Angela Merkel has already come out to warn that a second meeting may be needed if the EU summit this week fails to come to any kind of conclusion, because bridges still need to be built between the countries. The countries at odds over this stimulus package.
Right, and if you take a quick look at PepsiCo's earnings, their share price rose 2.3% overnight, or at least at the close, because net sales, although net sales fell by about 3%, revenue came in at about just under $16 billion, which beat the $15.4 billion that was expected. The second quarter ended June 14th, and Pepsi reported a net income of $1.65 billion. That's down from about $2 billion on year. That's about 20% down, if my math is correct there. That's back of the envelope, don't take my word for that. But one thing that was noticed was food business did better. I think people were buying more snacks at home. And this has been something Pepsi has been growing over the last few years. I think it's part of their Frito-Lay acquisition and all of that. So right now the stock is at about $134.91 with a consensus target price of $145.
And we're going to be coming back with more business news and analysis. Specifically, we're taking a look at what exactly went down on the first day of Parliament with Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid, Research Fellow at the Ilham Centre. That's happening after these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.